It is. Let's do this. The Cult of Hockey podcast by the faithful and for the faithful. I'm David Staples of the Edmonton Journal, and I'm here tonight with Bruce McCurdy. Hey, Bruce.
Hey, David, how are you doing tonight?
Fantastic. It was a historic night in Canadian soccer slash football history. A absolutely thrilling shootout victory in a 1-1 game of Canada over Venezuela. Canada goes to the semifinal of the Copa Americana against Venezuela. Bruce, that game put the erratic in frenetic. And I know there's no erratic in frenetic, but that's the point. It was an insane game where Canada and both Venezuela had all kinds of chances to score, and they couldn't score. So, yeah, it was madness itself. So, we'll see what happens.
So, who do they matched up with in the semis, or do they not know yet?
Lionel Messi's
Oh, back with
Argentina.
Argentina, eh?
Yeah.
Okay. And then, win or lose, they're in the medal round now, so they'll have a crack at a bronze at minimum at the end.
Do they have that?
Yeah, sure.
Okay.
You have two semifinals. And so you're going to have two losing semifinalists. So generally, they will play one another for the bronze. I can't imagine it would be any different from any other tournament.
Yep.
It's not like they have the
Alrighty.
page playoff format or something, right? That's this
Yeah.
is so.
So that capped off a big night, which had started off pretty good with the trade of Ryan McLeod in a trade that was generally celebrated by Oilers fans, even Oilers fans that, one quarter of Oilers fans, I'm going to say, who thinks Ryan McLeod is the bee's knees of a hockey player. Like he has a lot of fans, and you and I are also
I'm
fans.
one of them.
But I mean, some people even like him more than we do. And I think we have a lot of time for Ryan McLeod, but I didn't see anyone really complaining about the trade. And we'll get into that. But we're going to start off where we left off. And we left off on free agency day. We thought it was all wrapped up in the afternoon, as did many
It
commentators,
wasn't.
and they graded the Oilers. They graded the winners and losers of free agency before Jeff Jackson did his best work, which was signing Jeff Skinner, Matthias Janmark, and Adam Henrique. So let's start off. I
That
think
was a full day
yeah.
for Jeff Jackson and well, I know it was for you and me with five posts each, and Kurt wrote three that day. I'm pretty sure we set an all-time record at the Cult of Hockey, and I think the Oilers set a record for most transactions in one day. I counted 14, David.
It
One
was
buyout of Jack Campbell,
yeah.
and the signing of 13 players,
It was
one at a time.
a wild day, and by the end of it, Oilers fans were elated, Bruce. They were absolutely elated. Interestingly, listening to the podcast and such from around the league afterwards, I think a lot of commentators kind of missed the point, the true brilliance of Jackson on that day. And it's because there wasn't any super big name signings. Like the biggest name is Victor Arvidsson. He's probably the best player that he signed that day. So there wasn't any like names like the biggest names, Jake Guentzel or Steven Stamkos or Jonathan Marchessault. There wasn't any of that, and that's what got a lot of the attention. But the
No
brilliance
Nikita
of
Zadorov,
no
David.
Nikita Zadorov, Elias Lindholm, but the brilliance of what he did, Bruce, was he signed a boatload of really good players at huge bargain prices, discount prices. And I didn't hear that mentioned hardly at all, even from astute hockey observers. It was kind of like, well, he got the Henrique and he convinced this player to come back and that. There was some mention that the players decided to stick with the Oilers. But I think, Bruce, I don't know what the average is, but we're going to get into a little bit of this. But players took, in terms of the raises they could have got in other cities, well, I worked it out for Janmark and Connor Brown. Janmark signed for 3 years at 1.145 million, and Brown at 1 year at 1.1 million.
1 million
And
flat.
yeah, and there was all kinds of players, Bruce, in that same category. Let's let fourth liners who played less than
I saw
11
your
minutes.
list.
Strength. So Sam Lafferty, Blake Lizotte, Brandon Duhaime, Garnet Hathaway, Kevin Stenlin, and Ryan Lomberg. These all tend to be a little bit more physical, or a lot more physical players, but not but similar even strength scoring, generally speaking. Lafferty a bit higher. These players had hits, but Brown and Janmark were way better penalty killers than any of them. Some of them aren't penalty killers at all. So I thought they were all in kind of the same categories, which would be really, really good, useful fourth line players last regular season, and including the playoffs. And those guys, on average, signed for 2 years, $2 million each season per. $2 million per. That was the going rate for this kind of player. And that's 65, you know, if that would, you know, based on the average of what they signed for Janmark and Brown, that would have been a 65% raise if they had taken that money for them, based on what they're going to get with the Oilers. And with Adam Henrique, Bruce, it's even more extreme. Here's some of this. So Adam Henrique, at his points per 60, which is one way to rate a forward, I think we can all agree Adam Henrique's a pretty good defensive center. Like, he's not below average, at least. He's above average defensive center. So I'm going to compare him to Sean Monahan, Elias Lindholm, Alexander Wenberg, and am I writing so bad I can hardly read this? Chandler Stephenson. So these are other players.
They're in the ballpark. That's reasonable set.
Okay, so Henrique had 1.87 points per 60. Monahan had 1.84. Chandler Stephenson, 1.66. Elias Lindholm, 1.39 points per 60 this year. And Wenberg, 1.27. Mm-hmm. 1.27 and 1.39 is starting to get in fourth line territory, like, honestly. So anyway, I don't think any of those players, now those players tend to be younger players than Henrique. So maybe have more upside. They might still have more, you know, might be better bets to have good years. But Adam Henrique is arguably as good as any of those players. He signed for 2 years at $3 million. Monahan signed for 5 years at $5.5 million. Chandler Stephenson, 7 years at $6.25. Elias Lindholm, 7 years at $7.75. And Wenberg, 2 years at $5 million. Now, again, like, the term is longer on some of these players because they're a lot younger than Adam Henrique. So that makes sense. But the dollar amounts they're getting compared to, like, next year, would you rather have Adam Henrique at $3 million than any of those other players at what they're getting? I mean, it's just crazy what some of them are getting.
Well, Henrique got $6 million for 2 years. The term's perfect for me. I love two-year contracts for older players. You don't need to be going with this 5, 6, 7 year stuff.
No.
And the Oilers got enough, more than enough of those already. So in to some extent, the die was cast in terms of how the Oilers had to do business. They just weren't in the market to go out and sign some $30 or $40 million contract. And in fact, they didn't spend that much on all these contracts combined.
You're right.
I think it was, I counted 8 NHLers, and, you know, depends on where you want to draw the line. I included Josh Brown and Troy Stetcher, but I didn't include some of the, you know, guys that frankly haven't established themselves yet. But most of them were like super cheap. And I think it was $17 million for next year and $28 million altogether that they committed for these 8 players. And it was, whereas some of the guys you just named, teams committed more than that amount for one single player.
Well, Sean Monahan, he's earning more, $5.5 million, than the entire third line of the Edmonton Oilers from Game 7 next year. They're earning $5.54 million next year as a group, and he's earning $5.5 million. One guy who's a good player, but is he better than Adam Henrique? No, he's not. They're competitive. Boring Sean Monahan. And we get Janmark and Brown. Listen, Bruce, I remember the last podcast, I was a little down because I was hoping they'd get 2 out of 3 of these guys to come back. And they got them all. Wow. And they got them all at major discounts.
Affordable prices. Yeah.
Now, again, I don't know what the market, I don't know actually what Brown, Janmark, and Henrique, if they had tried to get top dollar, could have got.
More than they got.
More than they got. Yeah, way more.
For sure.
Like Alexander Wenberg at his 1.27 points per 60. Like
he got bought out before at $5 million, and now someone else is paying him $5 million. What's up with that?
San Jose, I think it is.
Like, anyway, good on the Oilers for staying away from those, and good on them for, you know, convincing these guys to take, you know, 1 or 2 year deals. And like I say, you know, right now they're working on mortar between the bricks. They got the bricks and they got the big brick contracts, you know, the 4+ years for $5+ million. None of that. They just, you know, fleshed out. And Jeff Jackson, I mean, I'll give him credit. He said, when interviewed at the draft, he said, you know, we like the guys we got. We want to sign as many of them as we can. Well, guess what? They did. They signed, what, 6 of their own free agents, counting Cal Pickard that they signed a couple days before. And then they went out and got Troy Stetcher, the one defenseman, but that entire third line. And then Corey Perry that they brought back. And that doesn't include the outsiders that they brought in, specifically Arvidsson and Skinner.
So, yeah, they lost Warren Fogle, of course.
Lost Fogle, lost Ahern. And he signed
I think LA got a pretty good contract for Warren Fogle, considering the prices that were being thrown around there. Like, he's not a bad hockey player. He will work hard, and he's got some skill, and he can kill penalties. He was part of that great Oilers kill. And, you know, he's like McLeod. The two players, if you look at the numbers that we keep, Bruce, kind of their plus minus on grade A shots at even strength, the two players who had the biggest drop between the regular season and the playoffs were Warren Fogle and Ryan McLeod. And I don't think it's any coincidence that it's those two players who are being moved out. And I think with different playoffs, it might well have been a different story for either of them. I just think that rightly or wrongly, the playoffs, coaches and GMs make up their minds about players. Can you help me win a Stanley Cup? When the chips are down, are you there to win the Stanley Cup? Will you do what it takes? Can you do what it takes? And sometimes these assessments are wrong. Like, I think Jordan Eberle, there was a bad assessment in this regard, and he went on to have some good playoff years in other cities. But sometimes they're right. Sometimes they are correct, and you just do need a different mix. So I like both Warren Fogle a lot and Ryan McLeod quite a bit. But I think it was the playoff performance that was the final straw with both of them.
Yeah. And another guy that's maybe on a little bit in the crosshairs that had a relatively, well, pretty poor statistical playoffs, Derek Ryan.
Yeah.
19 games, 1 assist, -9. And I think he is, he's the long shot of the returning players to stay on the team. I think there's, you know, he might, you know, be an extra forward, or he could very possibly lose out. I guess the departure of Ryan McLeod improves his chances some, but some of the players that struggled in the playoffs, they've either moved on from them. I mean, the minus leaders for the Oilers, and again, this is a quick and dirty stat, and we can dig into 5-on-5. Derek Ryan, -9. Vincent Deharnay, -9. Gone. Darnell Nurse, -9. And they got to figure out what they're doing there. Ryan McLeod, Warren Fogle, each -7. Gone. And Evander Kane, -7. They got to figure out what they're doing there. But, I mean, those are sort of the players that were losing their parts of the games in the playoffs. And 3 of them are flat out gone. And a couple of the others are, I would say, skating on thin ice.
So I have the lines right now: RNH, McDavid, and Hyman, Skinner, Dreisaitl, and Arvidsson, Janmark, Henrik, and Brown, same third line. And then a fourth line of Evander Kane, Dylan Holloway, and Corey Perry, with Matthew Savoy biting at Corey Perry's heels. Or Derek Ryan. I think Savoy will be in the minors probably. So Skinner was signed for $3 million. Apparently he could have gone to Toronto, was trying to convince him to come there. Mm-hmm. I honestly have very little impression of the player. I've probably seen him play many times over the years, because every time they play Buffalo or whoever, he's Carolina, I've seen him play, but I don't remember him very much. He's not like Arvidsson, who sticks out in my memory. Mm-hmm. probably from playoff series, but right. So he is he's known as a
remember Jeff Skinner from any playoff series because he's never played never a single playoff one. Game.
So he's in the
category
scorer.
Of one. Yeah. He's played 1,000 NHL games. He's made $100 million in the NHL, and he's never played a single God. Playoff game. How's that for a combination? I think chances are very good he'll be playing a playoff game or two a few months from now. And pretty sure that's what was sticking in his craw. He doesn't need any more money. He wants to get in a situation where he's playing with good players that are going to win something. And he wound up in a pretty good spot. You know, he's got 357 goals in his career. He's 32 years old. I think he ranks 13th among active players in goals, 357 goals. He's had 10 seasons of 20-plus goals, 6 seasons of 30-plus goals. And, you know, he's been a consistent producer. He had one little crash right after he signed his big contract in Buffalo.
Yeah.
He was in the tank for basically 2 years. I think there was injuries in there, and there was just, you know, stuff not going well in Buffalo.
He did rebound, though.
Pictures at 11. And then he rebounded. We had a great year last year. Him and Tage Thompson really broke out on the same line. And unlike you, I have a very strong impression of this player, David. And I love to watch Jeff Skinner. I'm delighted that he's going to be here for at least one, probably just
oh, really? That's good.
Of his career. And the reason is because of his skating, he stands out as being the very rare NHLer who was an exceptional figure skater. As a young fellow, and he went to, I'm not sure, maybe age 14 age group. He went to Junior Nationals Canada and finished third. So, I mean, he was like way up there. Mm-hmm. And he doesn't, you know, you can see the skills, and he's not like, he's not even a burner, but what he is highly elusive with the spins and the step sequences. You know, those are straight out of figure skating. You won't see too many triple or even single axels out of him, but you'll see a lot of sort of the fundamental skating skills. And he's a dervish out there. He's going to be a whole lot of fun to watch on a regular basis. I've had him in my pool for a few years, so I've had an eye on him for a while. And I'm, you know, my wife and I are both figure skating fans for decades. And so it's kind of fun to see those skills being applied in a National Hockey League setting and working. I mean, that's, like I say, he's scored a lot of goals in this league, and a lot of it is through his elusiveness and ability to navigate tight spaces with innovative movement. So I'm kind of excited to see how he's going to look as an Oiler, and watching him play hopefully for 82 games plus.
Well, I hope I'm a little worried about the Oilers. They lost Harne, who's a big physical player. Darnell Nurse has not been a big physical player. It strikes me in a while.
Since he tore his hip flexor.
Yeah. So the biggest physical player was Evander Kane, and sure. Evander Kane has come in for a lot of heat. Frankly, Bruce, I don't get it. I think, according to our numbers, he was strong, even strength in the playoffs. He wasn't great on defense, never is. He's a mediocre at best defensive player who sometimes loses his check and loses in the D zone and wanders a bit. But he was great on the attack. He chipped on a lot of grade A shots. And, you know, lots of people were complaining about the Oilers' lack of physical play against Florida in the end. I heard that a lot, like Florida had a physical fourth line and we didn't. If you're complaining about the Oilers' lack of physical play and then you also want Evander Kane bought out or traded away, like what are you thinking? He was by far the most physical player on the Edmonton Oilers in the playoffs and the most effective physical player. He pounded Quinn Hughes almost out of that series. He stood up to Nikita Zadorov, and I still hold without Kane in that series. I don't think the Oilers win, because Nikita Zadorov was single-handedly running the Oilers' show. Quinn Hughes is an extremely dangerous player, And you had a player like him. He has a unique skill set of skill and ferocity. And people are really mad at him because he had a weak final. I don't know about that narrative, Bruce. I wonder about it, because I saw a guy who was killing himself to play, couldn't even sit on the bench. He was so injured. Apparently taking a lot of shots, you know, like needles to take to play. And people were saying, oh, he didn't perform in the finals. Like, where's the respect for a guy who gives it his all until he just has absolutely zero left to give and really gave a lot and really helped your team win the playoffs? I'm a little bit appalled, honestly, about some of the reactions I see about Evander Kane right now. That's my take.
He's a very polarizing figure, and he always has been, and he has been in a variety of NHL cities, from Atlanta to Winnipeg to Buffalo to San Jose, and now after a couple of years here in Edmonton, like he's like some of those coaches, you know, have a shelf life, and at a certain point he starts to grind on the nerves. He did himself no favors. I'll say this, when he announced at the beginning of the playoffs that he'd been battling a core body injury all year, and that whether it was his deliberate intent, anyway, the byproduct was that Ken Holland took a whole lot of shit for not LTIRing the guy. And, you know, there's a lot that has to go into that, including agreement from the player. We talked about this before. Anyway, that was kind of an unseemly thing. And I mean, good on him for battling through an injury, I guess, but bringing it out in public at that time was not really well thought out, in my opinion. He did keep bringing in the playoffs, but problem was either he got a new injury and they're talking about something wrong with his hip now, or the sports injury got worse and worse, because by game two of the finals, I think that was his last game, he had nothing. I mentioned this right at the time. It was the first game in over 200 as an Oiler where he had zero shots and zero hits. It's just not his game to do nothing like that, but he had nothing to give. And it's then true. They sat him, and he never came back.
Yeah.
Might have so the timing was seven. Really rotten. And anyway, it's...
I mean, Draisaitl was also a shadow of himself, yes, in the finals, and I'm 100%. Not hearing people with the same kind of narrative. But I understand that Kane has a history. So a lot of people are reading into everything that happened, including the fight with Corey Perry on the bench late in the year, and they think, oh, he's not getting along with his teammates. And I just say I have no opinion on that. I have no idea about that. And I just go on the way he played on the ice, and I loved his play until he got hurt, until he could no longer go. He went as hard as he could, and man, in those two early series against Los Angeles and Vancouver, he went hard, and he was a huge part of the Oilers' success. So I'm hoping that, I personally hope that he's coming back. I think he's worth his money still, and because it's you lose that player.
Well, Jeff Skinner is not going to do what Evander Kane does.
No, he is not, and neither is Arvidsson. As much as I like Victor Arvidsson, he will hustle and hit, but who's going to hustle and hit in this for? Like, so they got Kane and Holloway. They're the two big forwards. You got to have both of those guys on this roster. Otherwise, you don't have a lot of players who are physical in your forward lineup anymore. And they're going to have to, I think, trade for someone. Like, they have Corey Perry now. I mean. I'm not buying Corey Perry being an effective player in the playoffs next year. They're going to have to bring in another winger, which they can do at the trade deadline, who can really come and hit people and play a physical, tough physical game in the playoffs. I think that's going to be a need by the time the playoffs, by the trading deadline comes along.
Now put yourself in Kane's shoes, though, and you're now looking at a team that went out and signed Skinner and Arvidsson to play on the second line. Where the hell do you fit?
They'll figure it out. There's, you know, players are up and down the roster all season long is what I notice. And they change the lines every second game or third game. And you're here, you're there, you're everywhere. He's not going to play on the top power play again this year, but he wasn't going to anyway. So he'll get
Skinner or Arvidsson.
Yeah. They'll figure. Listen, if they can play their four lines in a balanced way, Bruce, four lines in a more balanced way and not burn anybody out, that's not a bad idea too. And that's what they have the opportunity to do here. So I'm all for that. That would be that would work for me. All right.
One small thing I'd like to see is the first power play unit cut back a little bit to say minute 15.
Yeah. Who else was talking about that? I heard someone mentioning that. I can't remember who. It might have been on Got Your Back. I think maybe Strudwick was talking about it. And that struck me as a good idea. So we'll see. It doesn't, you know, it looks like they probably solved most of their cap trouble here. We don't know yet for sure. Maybe they still have to make another move. But, you know, if they go with a smaller roster this year, Bruce, again, like they did last year, then they're that helps solve that problem right there. And they're very close to meeting the cap at this point because Jackson went over. Bruce, what would you say? We'll get to this in a second. Actually, we'll finish up with the Jeff Jackson question. The next thing that happened was the Ryan McLeod trade. What do you think of it?
Well, I'm a fan of McLeod, and I'm a fan of some of the stuff that he brings. The team doesn't have an abundance, which one of them is youth up front. Another is speed up front, which, you know, I always talk, you know, in terms of what he adds to team speed, but obviously his individual speed was, I mean, only McDavid really rivaled him, and I think they'll miss that. I thought he was decent value for the $2.1 million. Like, he was outscoring 3C, which is a nice thing to have until the playoffs. But his performance in the playoffs left me a little bit cold. I thought they might move him out for to make cap space, and I thought either they might trade him out with another expensive player. Like, there was some people saying that he might go with, say, CeCe as a package deal to make cap room. But I'm pretty happy with the way it turned out, because they traded him and Ty Tulio, a sort of mid-level prospect in the farm system, for one hell of a good prospect in Matthew Savoy, younger brother of the guy the Oilers just cut on June 30th when they didn't offer him a qualifying offer. And yet here we are, what, 5 days later, trading for the younger and way more talented brother. I mean, to put this in perspective, Carter Savoy went 100th overall in his draft year, and Matt went 9th in his draft year. It's like comparing, you know, Seth Jones to Caleb Jones, right? They're brothers, but one of them's just got way more talent and pedigree than the other. And we got the good one now in the Savoy family. And he's 20. He's got his contract that he signed 2 years ago after going 9th overall slid twice. So he's still got a full 3 years to run on his entry level contract. He will be exempt from waivers throughout that time. So where they were going to have a numbers crunch in the fall and lose potentially a player on waivers, well, they just traded a player and replaced him with a guy that they know is, you know, likely almost certain to be on the farm for the first of those years, but they have the flex that they can move him up and down when they need to, if you have a numbers crunch on the salary cap front. And that's something we saw in the past, you know, with Broberg, with Holloway, that they, you know, when the cap got tight, they sent him down, and because they didn't have to clear waivers, no problem. Well, next year, both those guys will have to clear waivers. So it's kind of important to have some guys that are a little more maneuverable. And Savoy, like, at the draft, when the Oilers traded a 2025 pick for a 2024 pick and picked Sam O'Reilly, and they interviewed Jeff Jackson at that time, and he said, we got to get our pipeline going, because they 2 years where they had almost no draft picks, so, you know, in the top 150. And now in a week, I would suggest that maybe the top two prospects in the Oilers system are Matthew Savoy and Sam O'Reilly. Just got them fresh, and they had, you know, with really no draft assets, no obvious way to bring in a youngster of Savoy's skill. I mean, this is a guy who he didn't quite get exceptional status in the WHL, but he kind of got a half a deal with Winnipeg when the Ice went to Winnipeg, and they drafted him first overall in the WHL draft, and they applied for exceptional status, and the league agreed that he could play half the games. So it was kind of a meet in the middle solution. That was the COVID year, but he wound up playing as a 15-year-old 20 some games in the dub. And usually you don't see many 15-year-olds in that league. And by this past year, he had he played a game with Buffalo. He played six games on conditioning with Rochester Americans, 5 points, pretty good. And then in the dub, he started Wenatchee Wild, which was where Winnipeg wound up. Mm-hmm. And then partway through the year, they traded him to Moose Jaw. And so between the two teams, 34 games, 30 goals, 71 points. And then in the playoffs, not quite the rate of scoring, 19 games, though, 10 goals, 24 points, and win the league, the Western Hockey League. So that's how he left junior hockey in his last year, was going to the Memorial Cup, where he scored 4 points in four games. And so this is a guy with, you know, he's got pedigree, and it goes way back, David. I saw this guy play 6.5 years ago. He's 20 now. He turned 14 on January 1st of 2018, and later that month, he was the MVP of the John Reid Memorial Tournament here in St. Albert, which is one of the, you know, it's very top-level bantam tournament. It's just tons and tons of WHL and junior scouts that attend this tournament, because that is their pool that they draft from the bantam level, right? And, I mean, the tournament that he was at here, I saw that team play the Northern Alberta prep team, or whatever they were called. Saw him play two games, including the gold medal final. And Matt Savoy, I think he was the youngest player on the team, or very close to it. He certainly was the smallest player on the team. He was tiny at that time. He looked like Theo Fleury in the scheme of things, but smaller, like everyone, you know, there was no
Bobby Lalonde
hulking monster. Yeah, like super tiny guy, but super skilled. He scored the tying and winning goals in the third period of the gold medal game. I mean, that'll catch your eye. So I learned his name from the PA guy saying, goal scored by number 7, Matthew Savoy. I heard that name 2-3 times already in this game. And, you know, and just his style of play. Like, he really stood out for his smarts and competitive edge and stuff. And he's just a real tiny guy, and that grabbed your attention too. And he's still small, but he's like 5'10", 180, kind of Connor Bedard size. So, you know, you'd want him hopefully to fill out a little bit, but just super skilled. And that was my first time attending the John Reid. I've been a number of years since, and that was probably the most memorable in terms of prospect. He had as a teammate Dylan Gunther, who was 9 months older than him, but Gunther was second in the tournament in scoring behind Savoy. There was another guy in there, the young fellow that Dallas has got
Stankoven.
Yeah, Stankoven, and he was like sixth in the scoring race, and Savoy. So, I mean, obviously these players have changed, they've grown, they've developed, you know, physically and as hockey players since then. But at that time, he was the standout player in the tournament, and the rest of them all had 2003 birthdays, and we're in the draft class a whole year earlier than his. He went 9th overall a couple of years after that. And now here he is in the, you know, well, several years after that, now that I think of it, because he was 14 and 0 months at that time. And, you know, he's a quite an exciting prospect. I would say he immediately becomes Edmonton's number one prospect.
Bob Stauffer, the Oilers, mentioned that, number one prospect, probably true. So, Bruce, I liked four things about the trade. First of all, Adam Henrique had beaten out Ryan McLeod as the fourth, third line center on the team.
Right.
And I think they're going to go with that next year quite right. a bit. Dylan Holloway can also play center. He's a center in college. He's probably at least, I think he'll be as good a center as Ryan McLeod will be in their NHL careers, depending on injuries. Holloway's a slightly more aggressive. He's a much more aggressive player, more I should aggressive. Say. And he's bigger and stronger. I don't know if he's taller, but he's bigger and stronger and far more aggressive, just as skilled and a great skater too. So they have players to replace him, and Henrique beat him out plain and simple. And when they signed Henrique, McLeod's days were numbered in Edmonton. The cap space issue is big. He was earning $2.1 million a year, probably going to play on the fourth line. I liked him as a second line winger or third line winger, McLeod. I think he actually played better as a winger than as a center. He his speed on the attack was noticeable. He meshed well with Draisaitl, but he got beat out. And the cap space, you can't have a fourth line player earning $2.1 million, just like DeHarnay had to go, because you can't have a third pairing defenseman earning $2 million on a team with as many great players as the Oilers.
Like Bjugstad and Kostin last year.
Yeah, the cap
for $1 million, they're a good deal. For $2 million, there just isn't space anymore.
Yeah. The cap hit for Savoy is, he earns about, his base salary is
$886,000. $1 million in bonuses.
But he's got $1 million in bonus a year, so it's $1.9 million a year, essentially, his AAV. But on the Oilers, if he was to play, he'd be unlikely to make his bonuses because he's unlikely to be in the top six. Although it's possible, if there are injuries, they now have someone who certainly has the pedigree and the background, and Scott Wheeler of the Athletics, super high on this player. Scott Wheeler ranks him 20th of the players outside the NHL. Button didn't have him on his top 50 list, but Wheeler did. And he just raves about his offensive smarts, passing ability. He just sounds like a dynamo on the attack. And so this is the fourth thing I like. It's just his potential as a player. Players taken at his range in the draft around 9-10. They become top end player, like top six wingers or top four D men about half the time in the NHL. Mm-hmm. Half of them make it to that high level, and then half of them don't pan out at all. Looks like the Oilers are in the more recent drafts with Bouchard. He's already made it. Broberg has a real chance to be a top four defenseman starting next season. And Holloway, who was taken, I think, 13th or 14th overall,
14th.
Will also has a chance to be in the top six at some point in his NHL career. So Savoy, I'd say, based on his trajectory, it's a little, I think he's probably dropped his luster has dropped a little bit since he was drafted. He's been injured since then. But he had a really good season this year on the attack, but he hasn't made the NHL yet. Sometimes these guys do make it. So I would say he's probably got about a 2-5 chance at this point. Just on the odds, on average, this kind of player would make two times out of five, he will be a top six NHL winger. Those are really good odds, actually. Like, that kind of player is extremely rare, extremely hard to get. And he's got that potential. And we'll see if he's able to cash in on it. So I see him starting the year in Bakersfield. Mm-hmm. But if there's an injury to a top six winger, or even a third line winger, we might be seeing this guy in Edmonton, and he may impress us. We'll see what he's got. Carter Savoy was an interesting. I really like Carter Savoy's game. Super smart player, good with the puck, but he just didn't. It didn't translate to the pro game. This happens to all kinds of top scoring players from junior and college hockey, which Carter Savoy was. And it could happen to Matthew Savoy that his game will not translate either. I think Carter Savoy's game translates to Switzerland very nice. And I would expect to see him in a league like Sweden or Switzerland and doing very well there. But it's just, there's only so many guys who can play in the top six in the NHL. It is a rare breed. He could be one. And the fact that you got that kind of player who's a decent, roughly a coin flip chance of that in a trade for Ryan McLeod on a contract in the next 3 years when the Oilers are cash strapped, which probably isn't going to cost you a lot, right. $1.9 million at the most if he hits all his bonuses, if he makes the top six.
The bonus part gets put off by a year, right?
Yeah.
So his cap hit for the, if he gets called up this year, we know it's going to be $886,000. Well, he can afford that. So
I just think this is it's actually kind of a freebie trade, because you had to move out salary. You had no choice. You had to move out salary. And now you get a freebie chance at a winger who's a coin flip of playing in your top six. That's kind of sweet. Like that's a nice piece of work from Jeff Jackson. I can see why people are elated. And this is all things considered with Ryan McLeod. Ryan McLeod could play 10 more years in the NHL and be a good third or even maybe second line winger, third line center. Wouldn't be surprised if that's his career in the NHL. He's a good player.
Oh yeah, he's got years to play. But established NHL.
You couldn't afford him. Yeah. And it's harder to, you can't, like people were thinking, well, we'll put Kane on the ELC. It's not going to happen. He's not, or the long-term LTIR, right. I should say. We're going to put Kane on, not ELC. LTIR, long-term injured reserve. He almost was healthy enough to play in game 7. He's not so injured that he can't play next season. So I think this is a fantasy people have. He also has a no movement clause until next February 28th. The Oilers can't trade him unless he says yes. So this, some people want to see him traded. Some people want to see him on LTIR. Both things, I believe, are extremely, extremely unlikely to happen. And again, I'm in the camp that argues, why would you want that to happen? Because unless you're, who's going to stand up in the playoffs to Vincent DeHarnay?
The hammer.
Yeah. When Vincent DeHarnay's hammering on Leon Draisaitl, who's going to go get him? It's not going to be Jeff Skinner, you know? So we'll see. I like Jeff Skinner again, and I like all these players, but you need someone who can do this in the playoffs. Look at Florida, like with Sam Bennett, like the menace of that guy and what he contributed to that team. So, Bruce, let's end this off with just a grading of Jackson, Jeff Jackson.
I want to add one thing first on Matt Savoy. He is, in fact, a center and a right shot center. He could wind up being on the wing, as we've seen with so many of these other guys, you know, Ryan McLeod included, Ryan Nugent-Hopkins included, Adam Henrique, Leon Draisaitl. That can switch over to the wing, but he comes at it from, you know, center ice position and a right shot center at that. So
cool.
That checks a couple of boxes. And if he winds up being a winger, fine. And the comp that I heard from him that caught my ear was Braden Point.
That's a big comp. We'll see.
Compliment.
We'll see. That's a big it's a compliment. Yeah.
Yeah.
We'll see. We'll see. We'll see. Yeah. We'll see about that.
But he has things in common with that guy, who was, you know, a small guy with a big motor who just kept scoring at the WHL level and just kept on going and kept on scoring. Well, that's the high bar, which in Point's case,
Point came out of nowhere,
5'10", right?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. He was like a third round pick.
Yeah, but it's a boy that's much more highly rated from a younger age. But apparently he's got an incredible work ethic. That's what Scott Wheeler really likes about him. Just his compete level is really strong. So
that little kid at the John Reacher showed that.
There you go.
That was impressive.
Jacko,
how
do you rate him, Bruce, on a scale of the cult of hockey scale of 1 to 10? What do you think of Jeff Jackson's work as interim GM since he took over from Ken Holland?
Since the draft, because he was there. I've given him a hard 9. 9 out of 10. He's done a fantastic job. He said we need to get the pipeline going, and he stocked it with two really good prospects that kind of came out of nowhere. You know, it looked like, well, we got no picks and we got no real way of getting them. Well, now they've got O'Reilly and younger Savoy in the system. But what he's done on the big league club with the signings, he took the hard decision on Jack Campbell, but it had to be done. Of all of the signings that he's done so far, the transactions, the only 10-figure contract that's been involved in any of this of them is the one they divested in Jack Campbell's. Otherwise, everything, the biggest one was $8 million, $6 million, $4.5 million. It's total dollars over multiple years in each of these cases. And really added some good stuff. I like the innovation that I'm seeing from this guy. And he's really got the, I think his experience as an agent is really coming down. Like, he knows the GMs because he's been negotiating with these guys for years as an agent. And it was, I saw some people were grading him on free agent day. There were, you know, AB, somebody did a similar question. Uh-huh. And I saw some responses said, well, I'll give him a B or B minus. If he traded CC, I'd give him an A. Well, free agent day wasn't about making trades. It was about adding guys. And he added guys and brought guys back and brought back that entire third line for $5.5 million. Brought in those two top six wingers for $7 million and added a bunch of depth guys. And none of the depth guys was more than about $1 million. I think Perry was about the biggest one, and he was, I think, $1.4 million with bonuses, which he may or may not make. And a contract that's fully variable. It's, to me, it's a challenge to Corey Perry. The amount was no accident, $1.15 million, which is the exact dollar figure that can be buried in the AHL. And to me, that's a challenge. Corey, you know, here's your chance. We're giving you the maximum money that we can. But if you don't make the team, we can send you down. And, you know, it's not going to be any dead cap. You can't afford any more dead cap. You got to, you know, make the team and earn that money, but you're going to have the chance to do it. And seen in that light, the Perry contract was one I didn't think they would go back to him, but it's actually a pretty low risk in that they can do exactly that. Yeah. If he's, you know, if he comes back and he doesn't have it, well.
It's no risk, right? Yeah. You can just send it to the minors. There's no cap hit.
So pretty solid, like safe, smallish bets on good hockey players.
Yeah.
And he's flushed out the roster with, you know, fairly marginal cap space to do it with. And they still got an issue to solve on defense. They still have to take care of business and get Holloway and Broberg under contract.
And Drysdale.
Some Bouchard. I'm just thinking even of those entry-level guys first that are... They don't have a contract as of now. Drysdale and Bouchard still have for a year. So in due course, it'll be them. Be nice to get those ELC, you know, those qualified guys actually signed so they're not at risk of an offer sheet. Not that it's probably going to happen, but I'd rather just have it done and then see again what the lay of the land is on contract. Like, if they sign him for 1 year or 2 or 3 years, it gives you very different scenarios in terms of what their cap hits apt to be. So he still has work to do, but he's done a hell of a lot in under a week. Like, it's pretty amazing when you look at the, you know, the full week's worth of work from Calvin Pickard last Friday to Matthew Savoy this Thursday, and all of the, you know, the draft picks, all of the signings and, you know, decisions and, you know, judgments rendered in the case of Jack Campbell, Ryan McLeod, and the free agents that were allowed to walk, you know, Carter Savoy even, you know, like, it didn't work out for everyone to stay, but I think he's kept the guts of his team. And I think he's added some pretty meaningful parts around the edges. And he's done, I think, spectacularly well to add those two high-level prospects to a system that desperately needed an injection of talent. Well, it just got one. It got two. And that's good work by him. And you know, for a guy who claims he doesn't want to be GM, he's done one heck of a job in his first bash at it.
Here's what Captain Jack says. He's an Oilers fan on Twitter, at Oilers Jack. He says, starting to look like Jeff Jackson's worst move as GM is going to be when he hires a GM. And then there's Oilers blogger Matt Henderson, who has got a fairly sharp tongue. He said, I guess when you hire a former agent to run your hockey club, they have a pretty good idea who the stupidest GMs are. So that was right after tonight's trade. Ouch. Ouch. And I thought, that's rather unkind, but it just made me laugh so hard. I thought, I love that. And you know what? There may be some truth to it. I don't know. I can't say. But I will say this. There seems to be a little difference between the deals that Ken Holland would sign and the deals Jackson would sign. And I don't know if it's because the Oilers, after making the cup final, are in a far more advantageous position. Mm-hmm. And as it becomes starting to become clear, rumor out of Germany today that Drysdale's agent's talking about Leon signing. Of course, Leon saying he loves to be an Oiler. Maybe it's because the idea that McDavid and Drysdale are going to be here a long time is really firming up. But it seems like Jackson gets a lot better deals than Holland ever got. That may just be because, the state of the team has changed and it's that much easier to convince people to be here. Word is also getting around that Darryl Cates apparently is one hell of an owner in terms of meeting the needs of the players, in terms of facilities, giving them what they need, in terms of training, diet, exercise, airplane rides, concert tickets, who knows what else. It just seems like this is an owner who is really hitting a sweet spot in terms of pleasing NHL players and knowing what, understanding what they want, kind of the first class lifestyle that they've all grown accustomed to and providing it. So maybe it's easier for Jackson, mm-hmm. but I do have the sense, Bruce, that he is a remarkably persuasive person.
Yes.
And I think part of it is that I think he is able, because he was a player agent and he's been in management, because he was an agent, I think he's done a lot of thinking about what players want and what GMs want and what all sides in agreement want. And I think he does a really good job of understanding his opponent, what his opponent needs to hear, what his opponent needs, period. And selling him that. Framing the deal around giving the other guy what he really needs, mm-hmm. and then getting what he needs in return, Jackson needs in return.
Hey, and Jeff Skinner, you've already made all the money you could possibly need in your life, $100 million, but you don't want to go down in history as the guy that never played in the playoff game. You want to play in a playoff game with a team that has a real crack at it. And boy, could we ever use a scoring winger on Leon Draisaitl's line. How would you like to have him as your center? Now, we can only give you $3 million, but just for 1 year, you know, and then in a year's time, your bargaining position will be fantastic and we'll see where it goes, you know.
I don't think he frames it like that, Bruce. Well, I think he gave us a hint with Draisaitl, with the Draisaitl contract. And he said something interesting. And I think this is how he frames things. He said, we got to get the new GM. And we have to talk hockey philosophy. We've got to talk some philosophy. So I don't think it's like, I think it's very subtle, I'm guessing. And it's more like our whole goal here is excellence. Now we have excellence in every facet of this operation, you know, from the team facility to, you know, the training, what the players eat to how they exercise. Every single thing is at the very highest level. And this is a free agent pitch. We think you could fit into that world,
right.
into that culture of excellence, that you could be part of that. And, you know, it's not without its sacrifices, but the rewards are tremendous. And I think just what he was saying, like this philosophy that he, because what, listen, the philosophy that they need to sell to Leon Draisaitl and Connor McDavid is, if you take 14% or 15 or 16% of the cap, it's not going to work for winning the Stanley Cup. But I don't think you could, like, you don't say that, because you, what you, you know, you just sell them on the dream and the things that make them hum as hockey players, which is to win championships, to be an excellent player, to be part of a great team, to be part of a higher purpose. And I think that's what he is. He's kind of a higher purpose guy. And he's selling that, and it's, I think it's working. And again, just speculating, I don't know what he's saying, but he tipped his hand a little bit there when he talked about his slow play on the Drysdale contract and the need to talk philosophy, because you're only talking philosophy when you want to, when you want to do a very clever sell job on him taking 12% of the cap.
Well, his first selling point is, hey, look, Leon, what we were able to do with the extra money we had while you're still making 8.5. We got you two wingers that you needed and wanted, you know, potentially. It sure helps, anyway,
doesn't it? When these players take all discounts, mm-hmm. that's the culture now. Yeah. It helps the most, though, when the big guys take it. And mm-hmm. and to win the Stanley Cup and compete in the years to come for the Cup, the way the NHL is structured, everybody's got to do that, or it won't happen. And we'll see what happens in these next negotiations. I noticed that Frank Saravalli was actually talking about $14 million for Draisaitl initially. And then the last time I heard Frank talk, he was thinking, oh, I think it might be a little less than that. Because 14% is actually a fairly high percentage of the cap. I think it's around...
$14 million, yeah, it'll be...
15%
of the cap. Of $88 million?
Yeah, it's a fairly high percentage of the cap. So they actually need Leon to come in like more around 12 to 13. And I don't know. And again, I don't hold it against the player if that doesn't work for them and they need the money. And if that's what the orders, if the orders decide to pay, they decide to pay. I don't hold it against Darnell Nurse what he makes. He negotiated that contract and it was done in good faith by both sides. You know, I hold against the players their performance, whatever they make. And I hold it in favor when they're playing well. But, you know, if it goes a different direction. But I think Jackson is brilliant at selling a vision and an idea, and it's working.
What grade did you give him?
I'm with you. I would have given him a 10. Is it a 10? I was thinking. And then I thought, well, if he had been able to trade Jack Campbell's contract and not swallow too much of a poison pill, or if he had been able to move out CeCe and get something, although he did move out McLeod and get something. But if he had been able to move Jack Campbell's contract and not have to buy him out, and if that had worked for him, I would have said 10. But and so that's walking on water as GM, making a move like that. And it can be done now and then. But so I would give, I'm with you, a hard 9, and it's close to 9.5 for me.
Outstanding, like, is what 9 means, and I'd that, say that's what his last week really has was. Been. And word outstanding. So,
yeah. All right. Are we done? Any final thoughts or go Team Canada and soccer, man? Beat
go
those
Team Argentina Canada teams. And soccer.
Yeah.
And, yeah. The Oilers are in a pretty solid position right now today compared to where they were, you know, as the season came to an end. And, all of these, you know, expiring contracts, the low money contracts were expiring, the big money contracts were hanging around forever, and there was a lot of ways things could have gone sideways, and not too many ways where they actually did go sideways. So I think it's been a very encouraging week of management by a team with no manager.
Yeah, he'll always be the manager, I think. Like, yeah. He'll do a lot of the work. The way he described GM is you travel with the team and you're taking care of a lot of the day-to-day stuff on the road. He doesn't want to do that.
Right.
Oh, and the final thing, John Shan was on Oilers Now tonight, and there has been talk that Stan Bowman might be the Oilers GM, and a lot of people kind of leapt on that. And John Shannon, He downplayed that notion quite a bit tonight on Oilers Now, saying that he thinks that Stan Bowman will probably come back to the NHL in an advisory capacity initially, fairly quiet role, not running the show. And I think that's probably what's going to happen as well. And I think that's probably an appropriate path. And I don't know. John Shannon said he had not asked Jackson, but that's his understanding is what's going to happen with.
Making the guy a full-fledged GM after he's been away from the game for 2.5 years.
Well, there's that too, right? Yeah.
Bit of a reach, but.
Yeah. We'll see what happens, but that's
I think there will be an outcry no matter what.
Yeah.
What the job description is, if he gets hired, just based on the history. But anyway, Josh Shannon had, I thought, I heard that section as well. I thought he had a good point about that.
Yeah. All right, Bruce, let's leave it there.
All right.
Thanks for talking tonight.
Yeah, thanks for listening, everyone.
And in the meantime, and in between times, this has been another edition of the Cult of Hockey podcast.